Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to We're Drunk and We Know Things in a cold and chilly February.
Yes, very.
That is where we are.
Yeah. Not if you're listening to this in, like, Papua New Guinea.
We
are. Who, by the way, need to get their numbers. They need to get the numbers up again because they're dropping off. Anyway.
We're well and truly into 2020 at this point. All of the celebrations, libations, and general Asians of the festive season are past.
General Asians? Moving on.
You know, they're not from anywhere you can put your finger on.
What I like about this is that we've started so strong.
Huh. Last month, I forced Mike to watch a Disney musical sing-along extravaganza in the form of Frozen.
Sure.
This month, Mike has had his revenge. And has decided that we are finally going to indulge him a bit and do a Hitchcock film. Arguably the most studied, most navel-gazed film wankery director of all time.
I think you're forgetting about Ingmar Bergman, but certainly, yeah, it's fine.
He's up there. Fortunately, we did manage to talk Mike around from just picking one of the absolutely obscure.
Yeah, I was going to do Trouble with Harry. You know, that one that everyone's seen. You know,
ridiculously well-studied movies. And we are actually doing one that I quite enjoy, to be honest. Mm. Probably won't enjoy it anymore after this.
This is all fun stuff.
This
Very
month.
Little lens talk.
This month, on We're Drunk and We Know Things, Alfred Hitchcock's North by Northwest.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
North by Northwest. Made in 1959. $4.3 million budget. It was $1 million over. Made $9.8 million. This is how I'm doing the whole podcast. Just literal bullet notes. Written by Ernest Lerman, who wrote The King and I and West Side Story. And it was shot in 78 days. Thank you. Lift music that, motherfucker. before we do get into filming and everything, those are the cliff notes. Do you want to do the plot summary?
We can do.
Because it's a doozy. A lot happens in this film.
It's quite complicated.
Yes, it
is. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you've got, 2 hours, 16 minutes, 2 hours, 15, give or take.
Yeah.
Which is a lot longer than I remember it being.
It's legit packed. I'm trying to remember what order shit happens in.
All of it is... So, we start with Cary Grant.
We open on Madison Avenue.
We do.
Where Ant-Man, Roger Thornhill, is talking to his assistant.
Okay, if we're going to do it like that, we're going to need two and a quarter
hours.
We're not. Yeah, so, Ant-Man, Roger Thornhill.
Yep. He goes to a bar... and some thugs are looking for George Kaplan, and they get a bellboy to say, George Kaplan, telegram, get your news for George Kaplan. Then he calls him over. And
to order
think,
a drink.
To order a drink. He wants a martini. And they're drinking Manhattans. And they're in Manhattan, so why wouldn't they be?
Because he literally says, I'm going to have two martinis.
Oh, right. Okay.
In an earlier scene.
That's weird, because they're brown, those drinks that those guys are drinking.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, no, fine.
I don't know how they made... martinis in the 50s?
Yes, really bad at distilling, so everything was still brown.
Just all the water was really dirty.
Oh, boy. That's why the pizza's so good, though. So the thugs think, oh, that's George Kaplan, so they kidnap
right.
him.
So at this point, we have a classic setup, mistaken identity.
Yes, a classic Hitchcockian
which
setup.
Which needs to kind of run through.
Yeah.
They kidnap him, he gets taken to see James Mason.
And Martin Landau.
And Martin Landau, brilliantly.
Insanely good scene when he turns the lamps on and everything to see him, to get a good, like, come now, must we play games, and all that kind of stuff. Incredible, incredible.
There is a lot of very cryptic stuff from Mason.
Yeah.
Which, of course, Grant knows nothing about.
No,
because it's
course.
A mistaken identity.
Yeah, exactly.
There is then the weakest attempt to escape ever.
Yeah, he just makes, like, a partial lunge at the door, and that's about it.
Yeah, gives up. And then they force-feed him a bottle of bourbon.
Put him in a car.
Cut to put him in a car, not his car, which is a very nice Mercedes, by the way.
Big tie-in for this film. I'll talk about that a bit later.
And the whole point is they're setting him up as a suicide. Mm. He's in the driver's seat, but to be honest...
He's like tobogganing down the...
He is at his best in this particular scene, the scene that follows. Cary Grant drunk.
Amazing drunk
actor. Amazing.
Amazing drunk actor. Yeah.
He manages to wrest control of the car
yeah.
at the last minute.
Yeah.
Literally, it's one wheel yeah. hanging over
he
the
looks
cliff.
Over and makes the face when the wheels go over, yeah.
And then you get a ridiculous car chase, which consists of the bad guys chasing a guy who is so drunk that a minute ago he couldn't even sit up.
Yeah,
who
yeah.
is now... Well, driving incredibly badly, but still keeping it on the road.
And then the police eventually
rear-ends it into...
Yeah, yeah.
Or the police rear-end into him, or whichever way around it goes. He gets arrested, he gets taken to the police station.
Another
He's still very funny scene.
Screamingly
drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's trying to convince the police of the reality
of what
happened.
Telling the police to call the police. It's very good. This is the first scene. My first scene that I always think is funny, that I think is weird, is he's... very close with his mother. It's very weird.
He phones his mum.
He phones his mum.
Fair
it's
enough.
So good. Yeah, so good.
She then arrives and he convinces them all to go back to the house.
Yes, of course.
Which, of course, has been swept clean.
Yep. And there's
and
a
there
woman
are a couple
there,
of plants there
saying, oh, you were drunk at a party.
Oh, my God,
last
you were
night.
So drunk. I can't believe it. You didn't get a taxi.
You didn't take Gloria's Mercedes. She says it really weird. And he goes, no, I didn't take Gloria's Mercedes.
Yes, I think you did.
It's so good.
There's also, I'm not sure, it's around about this bit where he says, you know, you should get around. We need to go back there. You need to arrest those guys for assault.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Assault with gun and bourbon and a sports car.
And we then have a very small break, I think, at that point for an introduction to the professor and the government agency.
Yes, which is literally like... called the American Intelligence Agency.
Yeah, exactly. So good. It's no explaining.
It turns out they are aware of Kaplan.
Yeah.
And they are aware of the switch.
Yeah.
And they're also not going to do anything.
And Leo G. Carroll says, yeah, forget it. Leo G. Carroll, you recognise from Man of Uncle, Man from Uncle, I'm sure. And a shitload of other Hitchcock movies.
Yep.
But yeah, just let him crack on. It's good news for us.
So we've missed a bit. It turns out that when he asks where James Mason's character is, it turns out that he's at the UN giving an address. Which then leads rise to Grant heading to the UN building.
Yep.
To confront him and meeting... somebody else.
Somebody at the real Lester Townsend.
Yes.
The real
who
Lester Townsend.
Who is not James Mason.
Who is then killed by throwing knife, which Cary Grant catches the body by one hand on the arm, one hand pulling the knife out of his back.
And then turns around, smile for the photo.
And there's like a shitload of photographers there.
You then get possibly, in my mind, one of the best shots of the entire film, as he flees the UN building.
Yes, incredible.
Overhead.
Yeah, yeah, that is amazing. That is amazing.
And
the scenic matte painting in this film is insane.
Goes to...
the train station.
The train station.
Yes.
Just checking.
Puts on sunglasses.
Because, of course...
It makes
I'm
me
just
going to
put on my Ray-Bans. Can't see me now.
I realised when I watched this movie, just as a very quick aside, when I immediately Googled Cary Grant sunglasses, North by Northwest, went onto Amazon, put them in my wish list, and it said, you have added this to your wish list 4 times. Would you like it to be at the top? Like, okay, maybe I do this every time I watch this film and I've never bought them.
Fair.
Every time. They're Ray-Bans, just in case you're interested. But yeah.
Yeah, I know. So, on the train...
He meets Eve Kendall.
Eve Kendall.
Eve Marie Saint, who is insanely beautiful.
Yes.
Insanely beautiful in this movie. And also insanely good. She's not really a role she's played previously.
She knows all about him, but still has dinner with him.
Yes, exactly. Because she's like, you couldn't possibly do anything.
In her room, in the fold-up bed.
Yep. Yeah, yep.
Fantastic.
They may or may not bone.
They definitely bone.
Also, all this stuff on the train...
Are you familiar with the redub in that scene?
Yes. So, yeah, we'll come to that a little bit later, yeah.
They definitely bone.
So, the... that scene, all the scenes on the train car with those two are, like, the sexiest scenes.
They're super small.
It is insane.
Like,
it is in, like... outside of the redub, which we'll come to a bit later, the dialogue... I mean, the dialogue in this film is outstanding. It's absolutely extraordinary how good it is. But, those scenes in particular, you're like, how did they get away with, like, oh, it was all suggested. Like, it's quite heavily suggested. They might as well, there could be a guy walking past with a sign that says they totally bone in a minute, and it would be more subtle.
They're at it.
They're totally at it.
Yeah.
Indeed. So, they bond on the train, and they get off of Chicago, because that's where Kaplan has gone. So they believe.
Another favourite little takeaway moment, when he's hiding in the bathroom from the porter who's turning down the room.
Yes.
Pre-bonage. And he's suddenly whistling, singing in the rain.
Singing in the rain, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also...
That's
No, that's after.
That's later,
that's
when
later,
he's in
right.
the hotel
Sorry,
spying on her.
Shower. He spends a lot of time getting freshened up.
Well, what can a man do with his clothes off for 20 minutes? Have a cold shower. So good.
Yeah, so they then escape from the train.
Go to Chicago.
Yes.
They got off at Chicago, go to the hotel.
It turns out Kaplan has
checked in. No, she's checked in, and she's contacted Kendall. Eve Kendall has spoken to her, and she says, he says to go and meet you at this place in Bakersfield. Weirdly, it's Bakersfield, California, but meet you in this place. And then we come to the crop dusting scene. He gets off the bus. There's 8 minutes
By this
where
point, by the way, we know that Eve Kendall is actually working for the bad guys.
Yes, indeed. Sorry, apologies. Yes, that's very true. Because Martin Landau is giving her instructions in the telephone booths at the Chicago station, I believe.
Yes, and they're on the train.
Yes, and when they're on the train. Yeah, yeah.
So,
then
we go
the
to... He is waiting at the edge of a road for to meet the actual...
George Kaplan.
George Kaplan. Ends up engaging a random in conversation. And to be fair, we've all been there.
Yep.
When you're meeting somebody you've never met before.
Yep.
And you're like, excuse me, are you? And he does it in a very Cary Grant-ish way. It's brilliant.
Of course. Yeah.
And the guy's actually just waiting for a bus.
Yep. So then a plane, he's like, that's weird. That plane's crop dusting when there ain't no crops. And then the very famous being chased down by a biplane scene, chased into a cornfield, poison on the plane, jumps in front of a truck.
Yep.
Nearly gets run over, and then the plane crashes into the truck, which is a petrol truck, or an oil truck, rather. It's there's so much action in this movie. It's insane.
I mean, considering when it was made. Yeah. And he then steals another truck.
He does. Drives back to Chicago.
Back to Chicago.
Confronts Kendall.
At an auction house.
No. Confronts her in the hotel room first.
Oh, sorry.
She agrees to have dinner.
Yes.
And then she skips out while he's in the shower, and he's whistling, singing in the rain. This is a very complicated film.
That's right, we're doing it.
He follows her to the auction house where he confronts them. She's in that insanely beautiful red
dress. And James Mason is also there.
Yes.
And it turns out that Cary Grant's character didn't really think this through.
Yeah.
Because there's goons everywhere.
And he keeps disrupting
Landau.
The auction, which is very, very funny. $13. I like it. $20 for that chromo. So I love it.
He eventually gets arrested.
Nicked. Yeah, he starts a fight to get nicked. And he's like, don't you know who I am? And they take him to meet the professor, who fills him in that Eve Kendall is, in fact, an agent
of
theirs.
So, basically, Kaplan has been made up.
Yes.
He's completely non-existent. Of course he exists. I've seen him. I've been in his hotel room. He wears his suits short and he's got dandruff.
Yeah.
But it turns out that he's a completely fake agent that they've invented to take suspicion away from Kendall, who is an actual agent.
He's the plant to get Van Damme.
Oh, my God.
James Mason.
Meanwhile, somehow Grant gets convinced, being an ad man who loves his mother, to get deeply embroiled in this particular...
Well, because he says, listen, I know how you feel about her, but you, inadvertently you've endangered her life, and we need you to go to Mount Rushmore. They need to go north, flying by Northwest Airlines.
Oh, yeah.
Literally, the other day I was watching it and was like, oh, right, yeah. I've only seen this film 100 times. I felt very stupid. He flies north to Mount Rushmore, confronts her, supposedly. She shoots him.
Yep.
Turns out she didn't really shoot him.
Thanks, baby.
They have a lovely moment in the forest, which is really lovely scene. And then it's revealed that actually she's got to go back undercover. He objects and gets punched in the face by a forest ranger. Wakes up in a hospital. Climbs out the window and escapes. Meets another blonde. But she's like, stop. And he's like, my order. Because it's Cary Grant, so that's fair. He was picking up all sorts of strange. He goes to Mount Rushmore. He goes to Van Damme's house, where he overhears that they know about Eve Kendall being a double agent. Because Martin Landau kind of outs himself, first of all, as like coded as a homosexual, and then outs her. They take her to a plane. He escapes. They all escape. They climb up Mount Rushmore. They have a big chase across the faces of Mount Rushmore, which leads to them constantly falling and tripping and slipping and sliding. Martin Landau.
Heart and mouth. Oh my God.
She never lets go of a handbag
peril, I think,
mild
these days
peril.
It would be classified.
She doesn't let go of a handbag once. All the time she's clinging on by a fingertip, she's still got a handbag in her hand. It's incredible. Martin Landau doesn't save them and steps on his hand and then is shot by another ranger. they are saved. Van Damme is nicked, and then it cuts from him pulling her up onto the ledge to him pulling her up onto the bunk bed of the train.
And
they have
a
kiss, and then a train goes into a tunnel.
Yeah, no.
All the documentaries I read, I watched of that have literally just been them being like, that was Hitchcock, I had nothing to do with it. Oh, sure. So, yeah. So that's the Cliff Notes. A lot happens.
Yeah.
It is also one of the most beautifully photographed, edited, and acted movies, unwritten movies, of all time.
It's not bad.
But we'll come to that in our reviews. That's a nutshell. A Cliff Notes version, if you will. A Cliff Notes? Cliff Notes?
No, they're the Cliff Notes.
The Cliff Notes, right. So let's talk about the production.
Okay.
Production.
I'm guessing there was some.
There was. It was a film that was made, so there was definitely production. Lehman, as I mentioned, and Hitchcock were actually introduced by Bernard Herrmann, of all people. Another who did the music, of course, for this this film. And they were working on a movie of the wreck of the Mary Dear, which is like an old American naval disaster type thing.
Okay.
And Ernest Lehman said to Alfred Hitchcock, I cannot crack it. I quit. Like, I can't do this. I can't work out how to do this. So Hitchcock said, okay, well, no, we get on really well. We work really well together. Let's work on something else. So Hitchcock said, well, I've got this idea like about a foot chase across the faces of Mount Rushmore. I think that would be an amazing set piece. And I've always wanted to make a film where somebody is addressing the UN and they say, I will not continue until the delegate from Peru wakes up. And when the usher goes over to rouse the Peruvian delegate, they are in fact dead and have been murdered.
Dum, dum, dum.
So Ernest Lehman's like, all right, that's something to work with. I can write a film.
Really?
Yeah.
From Little Acorns, right?
Yeah, indeed, Jesus. Yeah. So apparently there was also an American journalist who had written a treatment for... Have you ever read the World War II story, The Man Who Wasn't There?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was based on that, basically, which is, for those who aren't aware of it, the American... It's a true story, I believe. Well, based on the true story. A British intelligence plan to dress up a body as an officer and put false orders in their pocket and then essentially push the body off of a boat so it washes up in Germany or occupied France, and then they would trick them into believing that, you know, D-Day was a week before or whatever. So he wrote a treatment of that, a thousand word treatment, and sold it to Alfred Hitchcock for $60. So all of these things kind of slowly became part of the script in the end. It changes a million times. Everyone's got a story. It's a famous movie. Like, everyone's got a story.
Yeah, yeah, no, no,
no,
no.
Kind of stuff.
I'm just quickly kind of casting my mind back. There's also elements of kind of Cold War spy stuff that, weirdly, this is a precursor to.
Yeah, this is like a proto-Bond in places.
Like a lot of Bond. Well, it predates Bond by about 4 years,
give or take. Yeah, yeah. Was it 62, Dr. No? 63? So 3 years. 63, okay.
Well, presumably they started making it in 62. Anyway, yeah, it predates Le Carre and all of that kind of business.
Yeah,
because Le Carre was still actually working in the Secret Service.
Very much.
So, yeah, it's very much of a...
Well, Cary Grant was considered for Bond because of this. So, but he wasn't, obviously. But, he was considered for Bond because of this, but they just couldn't afford to pay him, basically, for Dr. No.
To be fair, according to what I've read, Hitchcock could barely afford to pay him for this.
Yeah,
so.
Pretty much, yeah.
Anyway, as you were.
So just a few little bits that they mentioned. Originally, the title was going to be Breathless, but obviously Truffaut had already made that movie called Bout de Souffle. Hitchcock told the reporters that he had an idea about the film for Cary Grant hiding up Lincoln's nose and being given away when he sneezes.
I can see that.
And another title for the film was The Man in Lincoln's Nose. There's a very good making-of documentary about called the same thing.
That's
a terrible title. Initially in the writing, he wasn't chased by a biplane. He was chased by a tornado, by a cyclone, until Lehman correctly pointed out to Hitchcock, but they are trying to kill him. Yes? So how did they create a cyclone? Oh, yeah, right. So they changed it to a plane. I love he's running away from a tornado. It's just a coincidence, apparently. So the studio, when it came to casting, didn't want Eva Marie Saint as Eve Kendall.
The studio in this case is MGM, right?
Yes, the studio is MGM, absolutely. But Hitchcock insisted, because he does love a blonde. They were suggesting various and many other actresses, but basically brunettes. Eva Marie Saint had only ever worked in, like, Weepies, you know? Like, they said it, like... he said to her, there'll be no more sink scenes, like crying at a sink waiting for her husband to come home kind of thing.
She's very good at crushing her cheek lovingly into people's chests.
Yes, absolutely.
Whilst remaining perfect, the chin perfectly lifted and perfect profile in camera.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, that scene where they're kissing and they're turning around is because Hitchcock, when they do like tender, passionate kisses, Hitchcock ordinarily like envelops the characters in the camera by moving the camera around them in a circle. But because they were in a train car, they couldn't do that. So we had them physically turn around in a circle to get the same kind of feel. But it's very much like that kissing thing, exactly. She was very practiced at that. You saw Martin Landau in a plane. I've got planes on the brain. Insane in the plane, no.
Insane in the plane. He
saw him in a play and just rang him and said, be in this film. I don't want you to audition, just be in the film. Martin Landau is amazing in it, to be honest. Yes. I mean, everyone is. And then you've got Jesse Royce Landis, who is Clara Thornhill, his mum,
right,
who is actually
yes.
only a year older than Cary Grant.
Which I must admit.
You can kind of see.
You can totally see.
Yeah, definitely doesn't look like his mum, does it? It's like Angela Lansbury in The Manchurian Candidate playing the mum. You're like, she's like young and super hot. Like, yeah, that's right.
There are young, super hot mums, but yeah. Also, Cary Grant, one of those Hollywood icons and what have you that perhaps people kind of believing his own press a little bit because he looks a bit craggier than a man of his alleged years perhaps should.
He's the proto-Clooney, isn't he?
That's it.
So Jimmy Stewart was originally wanted...
The proto-Clooney,
yeah. He is. George Clooney's entire bit, his whole thing is just Cary Grant. So Jimmy Stewart was originally wanted for that role, but the studio actually wanted Cary Grant. And given that he had worked with Cary Grant a number of times previously, Hitchcock was like, not going to fight you on this one, that's fine with me.
Yeah, you can have it.
They actually had quite a lot of arguments on set, apparently, because Hitchcock was very much a celebrity in his own right, Cary Grant didn't like it very much that there was press there and they wanted to speak to Hitchcock and not to him, basically. Because, I mean, still 59, so Cary Grant's got a good couple of decades of films, at least a decade and a half of movies still in him, so it's not like he's getting to the end of the road. He actually had an apartment at the Plaza Hotel where they film at one point, when him and mother go and search the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he actually had an apartment there, and he used to hide in his apartment between takes because the police stopped showing up for security, because after they did it on Madison Avenue, somebody asked Hitchcock in the paper how the police were, and he said, I don't know why they call them the finest, because they're more like the NY, they're more like New York's worst. So they were like, fine, fuck you then. I just stopped doing security for them in New York. But apparently Hitchcock was very upset. Like, yeah, I bet he was. It was very funny.
Interesting parallel, architect who designed the hotel, same architect that designed the UN building.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, cool. Apparently, according to on-set reports, Cary Grant would charge 15 cents for an autograph and told some people that he would give the money to charity, but apparently that was a load of old shit. they just describe him in a number of things that I've read and seen as like a prudent businessman, and then it cuts to like some old cameraman who's like, yeah, he was never around when the bill came. Very funny. Cary Grant was cheap, apparently, according to on-set reports. It was very funny. He's off doing his therapy and taking LSD. Alfred Hitchcock hated all the costumes that MGM had made for Eva Marie Saint.
Yeah, so they went shopping.
They literally went shopping in New York. So that beautiful red dress and all the outfits she wears are literally those two walking up and down whatever the shops are in New York. Madison Avenue again? I don't know.
Madison Fifth.
Sure. Yeah, Fifth. Yeah, yeah. They just went clothes shopping and bought them straight off the models, apparently, which is, I mean, she looks fantastic. GQ wrote a thing about Cary Grant's suit in that film, saying it's like the most influential suit in Hollywood.
It's basically, they said it was the best suit in Hollywood ever.
Yeah, so like a lot of Ben Affleck suits apparently are tailored like that now. They literally cut them with like the Cary Grant cut. And Tom Cruise in Collateral is just wearing exactly the same outfit.
Yep.
Which... it was funny. I was reading it and was like, oh, yeah. That's a good movie. That's a good movie.
It's almost as if, you know, the stylistic impression that movie made on people would lead right to them adding, say, his sunglasses to their wish list four times.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Yeah, I've got a lot of pairs of sunglasses on my wish list. Look at that pair of sunglasses
I'm
James Bond's wearing.
Neither of us have the build to carry off that suit.
No, we do not. I could probably pull off a Hitchcock suit, but maybe not.
Oh, I suppose we haven't really mentioned it. Hitchcock's cameo in this comes
of course
literally in the first 30 seconds
so
of the
says,
film.
Because he's so famous at this point that he knew that if when he appeared on screen, it would take people out of the film, and they'd be like, oh, it's
Hitchcock.
Gets
it out of the way.
Gets out of the way at the beginning. Directed by Alfred Hitchcock appears. He is a bus letting people on. He runs onto the frame, seemingly chases directed by Alfred Hitchcock off the screen, and the door slams shut, and he's like, what the hell? We will talk about Sol Bass's incredible opening titles.
Well, kinetic
later.
Type.
So good. So good. Honestly, this is a toss-up for me between this and Psycho. I love the opening titles for this so much, but we will come to that. He wasn't allowed to shoot outside the UN. It was illegal.
Yeah.
So Cary Grant gets out of a cab, and there's a long shot of Cary Grant going up the steps and into the front doors of the UN. And the reason it's a long shot is that he's rented a van, cut a hole in the side, set a camera up, and secretly films through the hole in the side of the van.
Yep.
And then, yeah, that's got away with it, basically.
How did they get him coming out of the UN?
So when they get out of the UN, that's because it's from above. That's not
a that a chopper shot, or is that...
No. It's a scenic painting and a map painting.
What?
So it's him shot from above with a crane, and then made a lot smaller in the frame, and then it's scenic and map paintings. The scenic and map painting work in this film... are extraordinary. For a film in 1959, I've got like the super mega restored super great quality version, which it looks like it could have been shot yesterday. It's such a beautiful version. I highly recommend that Blu-ray. You honestly can't tell half the time. It's amazing. It really is amazing. So all of those big overhead shots aren't chopper shots or anything. They are matte paintings and scenic paintings. Quite extraordinary. Eva Marie Saint said that she only ever really got three pieces of direction from Hitchcock. Get your tits at... No. he said, lower your voice, don't use your hands, look in Carrie's eyes.
She was traditionally a bit shrill, a bit flappy, and a bit distracted.
Yeah, famously. Hitchcock shut down production for a day. You know the scene where they're in the telephone booths? And
yes.
Leonard is phoning her, giving her orders. He couldn't work out how he would have the phone number for that telephone booth. So was like, nope, until I can explain it, I'm not interested. We need to shut down production. Shut down for 24 hours. Came back and said, it's okay, I've worked it out. And people said, oh, so how? And he was like, doesn't matter. I know, so it's fine.
Oh, right. Okay. She phoned him.
He literally said, it doesn't matter. I know now. I've explained it to myself, so it's fine. We can keep shooting. He blatantly couldn't think of a thing and was like, we got to keep filming. I mean, Cary Grant costs us $5,000 a day, which we will come to. The old biplane business.
You mean the tornado?
Yes, the
T-Rex.
Tornado, yeah. So that scene, obviously, super iconic. I mean, that is a crane shot. They had to use a matte painting for that as well. You know the establishing shot, the bus driving down the road, super wide? There's a town in the distance, so they had to use a matte painting to block that out. But they said, listen, we can't use a matte painting on a crane. We're hanging from a cable. We're going to be swaying all over the place. So they got four guy ropes off the bucket that they were stood in and pegged it into the ground and raised the crane so they were tight and just filmed as quickly as they could, basically. But that is a matte painting as well. It is amazing. It's amazing. $4 million. I should have looked up what that is in inflation. Maybe we will in the break, and then I'll work it out. They planted that corn. They did an old Christopher Nolan.
No, they didn't.
They did.
No.
They planted that corn.
So, so when you were gushing during our Interstellar review that Nolan...
He planted it on the side of a mountain, to be fair to.
So he was just ripping off Hitchcock.
Isn't everyone, especially Christopher Nolan, ripping off Hitchcock? But that is that, and then that absolutely is. If you think about movies like Inception and those movies like that,
where are they meant to be during the biplane chase? Is it Idaho?
So they're meant to be outside Chicago. He gets a bus from Chicago.
They're meant to be outside Chicago. It's actually outside California.
Yeah, it's Bakersfield in California. Yeah. And it was like they shot in October and it was still 90 million degrees. They said that's the only day anybody saw Hitchcock not in a suit. Because an evening he turned up in shorts and a t-shirt. Apart from Cary Grant, who's got to wear a massive wool suit the whole time. this definitely breathes.
Hot day.
The makeup continuity must have been amazing. So apparently when they were shooting that, the script supervisor, who is essentially in charge, a script supervisor on set, is in charge of continuity. Peggy, forgot that he had all the dust dumped onto him in the cornfield. So when he runs out of the corn and stops the truck, they filmed all of that to begin with, and he wasn't covered in dust. And then she realised, and apparently was absolutely hysterical, and they had to reset and do everything again, cover it all. But it, like I say, in 90 degree heat. Amazing bit, that plane crashing into the oil truck.
Yep.
So good. There's no special business about that. They just blew up a fake plane.
They just crashed a plane.
No, they did. No, I think they probably pushed a plane up against it and then blew it up myself, but I don't know if they actually crashed a plane. But
it arrives with a bit of speed.
It's not...
it was coming in on a wire.
Lawrence of Arabia, where they crash that train. Yeah, it's coming in on a wire, certainly, yes, absolutely. So talking of on a wire, the bit where he ducks and the biplane flies over him...
Several times, but yes, all right.
The last one where he jumps into the ditch.
Yeah.
That's actually two shots. They filmed the plane swooping. So again, a biplane on a crane that was like cranked up like a pendulum. Mm-hmm. And then like, whee! And they filmed that. And then they filmed Cary Grant in a studio jumping into a ditch. And then they stitched the two together. So he's not actually ever there because they're not going to let him actually nearly get hit by a plane. It's Cary Grant.
Well...
But there's only one bit where it's a stuntman. And that's a bit where... As the truck first bursts into flames, he pulls himself out from under the truck and staggers out of the frame with his back to the camera.
Yeah.
That's the only bit that's a stuntman.
Oh, right.
All the other bits are actually him. So when he's running away or staggering away and the thing explodes behind him, that is actually Cary Grant. They're just kind of using like a pseudo contra zoom basically to make it look like he's nearer than he is. Does that make sense? That
yeah.
As you were saying, other little bits and pieces, as you were saying, the scene in the dining car... where she says, I never discuss love on an empty stomach. She actually says, I never make love on an empty stomach.
No.
And the censors were
can't
like,
say that's
yeah,
in
they were like, no, you definitely can't. So it's dubbed. So if you look at her lips, which I definitely was.
She's making
love. She's talking about making love.
Making it whoopee.
I mean, it is ridiculous how, like, I know it's meant to be like, oh no, it's subtext. It's definitely not subtext.
It's
out and out.
It's sexed.
Pro-sexed.
Oversexed.
Where are we? Other little bits.
But you think about it, plot-wise makes sense, because she is basically there to
she's
seduce him, distract him.
Yeah.
Total.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah. I was about to say, yeah, she's a honey monster.
Now that is a cereal I would eat. at the very end, when she shoots him... if you look, there's a little boy sat behind her who puts his fingers in his ears just before she pulls the trigger, because they've done it so many times. And it's really funny because they're like, all the bits that I've read are like, Alfred Hitchcock, the most exact auteur, one of the most exacting auteurs of all time ever. Why did he use that shot? Why did he use that one?
Because he thought it was cute.
How bad is everybody? It's way before she's even got the gun out. He's like, I mean, I never noticed it till it was pointed out in a documentary that I watched, to be fair. So it might just be they didn't notice.
Maybe he didn't spot it
until
after it was released, at which point it's a thing.
Could absolutely just be that. The Van Damme house, that beautiful house, is a painting. It's a matte painting. It's not a real house. He said, design me it. I know, because I looked that up to be like, where is that house? That's incredible. I really hope it's an Airbnb. And he just said, make me a Getty house. So they made some exterior sets. He climbs up the stilts. And then the rest is a matte painting. It's insane. It's so funny how much it is.
Oh.
How much it is. When the government found out that they were planning on shooting a chase scene that involved killing people and international espionage on a national monument, they banned them from filming there. Hitchcock said, this is a movie about defending democracy, not attacking it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ridiculous. It was like quite the actual controversy though. Quite the controversy. One reviewer suggested that he film his movie in England and the actors can climb around on the Queen's face. never been to England, eh? You know, every country doesn't have an equivalent of Mount Rushmore.
I mean, you are pretty much it, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's because only people have got the gall to take somebody's, like, indigenous people's holy mountain and put a fucking great big statue of their oppressors on it. But anyway, I'm not doing a soapbox thing anymore.
New year, new you.
New year, new me. Although, definitely everyone should look at the guy trying to carve Crazy Horse's face into the other side of the mountain. That he's single-handedly doing it, and it is amazing what he has done on his own. It really is amazing. So they built a fake Rushmore in the studio, which was a combination of a shitload of poured and sculpted concrete and a load of matte and scenic paintings. So when she's hanging off, the camera's on a tilt and she's actually lying down. So she's at like a 45 degree angle, couldn't fall off. And she's like 2 feet off the ground. But there's a painting underneath her on the floor that makes it look like. So these ones aren't as convincing. But
I must admit, it's a bit obvious.
Yes, yes.
A bit. But also, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
The perspective is nicely done. Yeah. You can't really see the joint. It's just obvious it's not real.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
But then it's obvious it's not real because she's a super Hollywood megastar.
It's Cary Grant.
And you're not going to hang her off an actual mountain.
Exactly. Exactly. The scene, there's a shot where they're in the foreground and Martin Landau is in the background chasing them through the tunnels, which are inside the faces, which is amazing because that is a composite shot of scenic paint of two different shots of scenic paintings and miniatures and sets stitched back together. But this all comes down to something that we were saying about earlier, which is the Vista Vision thing. Mm-hmm. So Paramount only ever made two movies on it. MGM made six or seven, but essentially it just massively...
Paramount made a lot of movies on Vista Vision.
Oh, I only thought they... Oh, okay, I'm wrong.
MGM only made two.
Oh, so I'm getting confused. Apologies. From what I understand, a lot of the visual effects shots of Star Wars were shot in Vista Vision.
There were a load of movies later on.
Because they're such high res.
Basically because of the increased resolution of the film stock. You know how it works?
It's like a precursor to IMAX and... So it's like 70mm and that kind of stuff.
No, they just flip 35mm the other way.
So you've got more room to film on.
You've got more width.
It is
gone. Pop
elegant
quiz,
in its
film
simplicity.
Nerd. First film ever shot on VistaVision.
Ben-Hur.
Nope. White Christmas.
Oh, was it really? Also, it couldn't have been Ben-Hur because Ben-Hur beat this film in a load of awards later on, so couldn't have been.
Yeah.
But yeah, White Christmas, really?
There you go.
On VistaVision.
Yep.
Wow. I thought it'd be like The Searchers or something, but no. Not some like massive plain Vista Western. Nope. Bing Crosby. Sure.
Well, they really need to make sure they get that log fire in.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's very interesting. So like I say, shot on VistaVision, which is why all of the scans now are amazing, because the resolution is so much better. It's why the colour pops so much. And that's why it feels so epic. It's got that scope of... It feels epic because the frame is literally epic in size.
And didn't require any joining up of three additional cameras or two additional cameras.
No, exactly.
And didn't require any bending of...
What was the one that was the two projectors that projected onto the screen and it did half the screen each? What one was that one?
Crumbs.
I can't remember what that is.
It was three. There was one
three
where,
sections.
You had and it was three cameras, three
that had
film,
to be
three
synced.
Projected, all synced.
I can't remember what that one is. But that was for like a lot of the John Wayne
that
epics
was,
because they were so big.
It predates this.
Yeah, it does.
What the hell was it? Is it Versa?
Oh, I don't know. I can't remember.
Anyway, we'll look it up. And then, of course, anthropomorphic widescreen, where they actually just bend the lens to fit it on a 35mm frame.
I don't understand why they didn't use more VistaVision. I mean, it couldn't have cost any more to develop, could it?
Yeah, because you're using more of the film per frame.
Sure, okay. Okay.
Also, I'm guessing
more color depth.
Honestly, look it up. Paramount made a shit ton of movies on it.
We should do a deep dive into different cinema formats.
Could
at some
have done
point.
It for this one if I'd actually bothered to look this up before we did the technical.
Admittedly, I feel like
segment.
That's on me. I feel like I should have worked that out.
It's not like you're the film. Go away.
The original budget was $3 million. It ended up being $4.3 million. When they went over schedule, part of the reason as soon as they went over schedule, Cary Grant got paid $5,000 a day.
He had a penalty clause in his contract.
And Eva Marie Saint did as well. Eva Marie Saint did as well, and she got $2,000 a day. I watched a documentary which is narrated by
her. Isn't that a good time to talk about the gender pay gap?
She makes a joke about it in the documentary I watched, where she's narrating it. And he's like, the budget ballooned, and this wasn't helped by Cary Grant's $5,000 a day after he went outside of scheduled shooting time. They shot this in 78 days. So what the fuck? How long did they schedule it for? They took this film.
2 weeks.
Exactly.
Basically, it was meant to be a long weekend.
And she was $2,000 a day. So she made a joke about how, on that thing, about how she thinks she was worth as much, if not more, than Cary Grant. I might agree. I prefer her performance in this from an acting point of view, because Cary Grant is Cary Grant. and Eva Marie Saint is playing a character. That's not a really complaint, because I love Cary Grant. But yeah. The studio wanted to cut 15 minutes out.
They did.
And Hitchcock looked at his contract and realised that, as he always had, he had final cut and was like, fuck you. He
told them to do one, because they wanted to get it under 2 hours.
Yeah, they did, yeah. Which is...
I must admit, when I sat down to watch this, I was like, oh, don't worry, darling, it was made in the 50s. It's only going to be feature-length.
Yeah, I know.
Two and a what now?
It does whiz by, though. So, as...
He fills every frame, but still, it requires a time commitment.
It takes time. As I found when I had a toss-up.
I'm assuming they had to put two intervals in to refresh the trochises.
I wish there were more intervals and stuff. I watched something the other day. I watched Seven Samurai the other day, which is 3.5 hours long, and there's an interval in the middle where they, it's just 5 minutes of symphony, basically. And actually, it was really good. It was very much like I could do with 5 minutes, actually. This is a long film.
Don't get me wrong. We appear to have solved this problem these days by... there are websites and apps that tell you, it's like, oh, if you need to pop to the loo, go during this scene. It's a bit slow and not really important.
Yeah.
They used to just put a break in the middle.
Yeah, everyone go and take a pee.
Perfectly civilised.
Going up, actually, everyone can go under a fag. You could smoke in cinemas then, so it probably wasn't an issue. So, my last two bits, I just wanted to have a quickly touch on, first of all, the graphic title opening. Saul Bass.
Yep.
Very, very famous graphic designer, if not the most famous movie graphic designer, who designed opening titles and actually is probably more famous for movie posters.
Yep.
So basically everything from Hitchcock, the vertigo of the guy falling into the thing, the opening titles of Vertigo of the same thing. Psycho, very famously, those the opening titles where the words split apart and come back together again. Because they're fractured, his psyche.
It might be time to say that I've never actually watched Psycho.
Have you not?
No.
Well, if you don't like horror films.
No.
It's not terribly scary. It's more suspenseful than it is horrific.
No, it was more, honestly, by the time it kind of got to the point where it wasn't terribly scary, it was also massively overdone.
Right, fair enough. Well, I mean, and I think that's a thing with this as well, is that a lot of, the double-crossing femme fatale, a lot of it is from noir and stuff like that. But if, like I say, like movies like Inception and stuff like that, there's a lot of movies.
We'll come on to this. We'll come back to this. But suffice to say, I just need to put that one out there. Yeah, it's come clean. My conscience is bad. I've never watched Hitchcock's greatest masterpiece.
I had to admit to a group of film nerds just the other day that the only Akira Kurosawa movie I'd ever seen was Hidden Fortress, and that was about 20 years ago. So I was promptly ordered to watch Seven Samurai.
You never watched Seven Samurai?
No, I'd never seen it before the other night.
We've had conversations about
Magnificent Seven, which I have seen. I haven't seen Yojimbo, I haven't seen Rashomon, I haven't seen Run, I haven't seen Throne of Blood.
Who are you?
Since the berating I got at my weekly film night the other day, I now have all of them on Blu-ray, and I'm going to be working through them, because I was nearly cast out of that group of nerds. And frankly, I need all the friends I can get.
Just to be clear, to that end, we are never doing Kurosawa on this podcast.
No, I agree. I love Seven Samurai. It was amazing. But you think doing the plot of this took a long time?
Anyway.
Saul Bass. So, yes.
Kinetic type.
Yes, kinetic type. Yes. You have something you wanted to say about that?
Well, this was the first time it was ever used, apparently.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
And when you think about it, again, it's one of those things that you watch this movie today and think, they're pretty... They're nice. It's well animated. 1959.
Yeah.
It's composited over a real-time shot of, the side of the building, right?
And
what have you.
Yeah.
And this stuff is whizzing in, whizzing out, and beautifully, perfectly timed.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work.
A lot. I mean, he was really
it's
a master.
It's also really well kerned. But anyway.
Kerned?
Kerned, yes.
What does kerned mean?
The spacing between the letters is almost perfect.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Well, I mean, I would assume... I wouldn't assume. I know. He did it by hands.
Yeah.
So, it makes it even more the better now, doesn't it? He's not typing shit into a computer and being like, oh, word art. He's like, he invented word art. He hand-invented word art.
Yeah.
Shit, I think that's the actual thing. Well, so he was amazing. And then the other amazing man involved in this is, of course, one Mr. Bernard Herrmann, who is extraordinaire of musical scores. Again, all of, a vast amount of Hitchcock movies. The Psycho strings, very famously are him. I love the score of this.
I do.
I do.
It's brilliant.
Bernard Herrmann. There are two film composers who I listen to just as music. And it's Bernard Herrmann and Johan Johansson, which is a bit lame because I like my pseudo neoclassical bullshit, and Max Richter, I suppose. But yeah, but Bernard Herrmann is, I mean, it's just, it's so emotive and so perfectly captures without any kind of bombast where it's not needed or anything like that. It's just, it can be understated. It's just, yeah, it's incredible.
The only thing I don't like, it's not a problem with him, is it's of the time.
Sure.
Where you have an introductory title sequence, mm-hmm. and they play the main theme for the movie over the title sequence, or under the title sequence.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is great, but it also means that you now know exactly what's going to be played when everything dramatic's about to happen.
Sure, yeah.
It's
okay.
Like, oh, really? You could have just done some nice little tweety doo 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 doo.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's very
kind of a little, what do they call it? Not a prologue.
Diddly, oh, I think he's going to have a run.
Yeah. Oh, it's about shit's about to go down.
It's so good. So good.
But no, it is brilliant.
Yeah.
That's it.
Sounds.
Right.
So it came out.
It did. So did Martin Landau, from the sounds of it.
Well, yeah, indeed. It was a smash hit, unsurprisingly. Everyone loved it.
Well, that's kind of convenient, because they went massively over budget.
Yeah, indeed. It made $10 million. Like I say, Ernest Lehman, I've been saying it wrong probably, when he first started writing the script with Hitchcock, said, I want this to be the Hitchcock film to end all Hitchcock films, which is why it's got like every Hitchcockian trope and his balls-to-the-wall action all the way through. And essentially every critic agreed it was the ultimate Hitchcock film.
Yep.
And
it's
made
really good.
He made Psycho the year after, so he's not doing too bad. But yes, so there's no controversy or anything to say. It came out, everybody loved it, because it's fucking awesome. It's really it.
One of those, there are very few cinematic moments where you kind of almost wish you could have been there to see it.
Yeah, amazing. It premiered at Radio City, which we walked past a few months ago. But they had such a massive thing. It was like a full afternoon of live shows and all this kind of stuff. And then the film being shown, they had a tie-in with Mercedes. So every ab man in Manhattan basically did a made a poster. Essentially, if you look on the internet, there are a million pictures that were made in the 50s for this movie, and they are, some of them are cool, some of them are terrible, but some of them are really cool. He did his normal
Cary Grant got milk.
I think this is the first time he did it, and if not, tell me in the comments. But he did his a guide to trailer, so the trailers wouldn't, his trailers wouldn't necessarily show stuff from the film, because he was like, no, you don't need to see that. They'd market the films based on him. So it was him and a travel agent saying, would you like to go on holiday, take a holiday from your life and have rock climbing and thrills and plane journeys and blah, blah, blah. And this, you know, I can guarantee you that you'll have a great time just as I did when I was making it. And like when he did Psycho, he did it like an advert for the Bates Motel, that he was giving a tour of the Bates Motel. Come and stay here where the mother may have died under suspicious circumstances and that kind of stuff. Because he was adamant that he didn't want to show any bits of the film because it would ruin the film. But he was so famous as a director that people would watch him doing that and go, yeah, I'll go and see that. If Hitchcock says it's good, that film he made. You know, yeah, amazing. But like I say, yeah, Mercedes tie-in. So the Mercedes that he nicks, Mercedes then used that as advertising material. This is how good our car is. Even if you're absolutely paralytic, you can still make it away.
He
stays on the road. And it was, you know, the car that Cary Grant drove, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a colouring in competition where children, amazing this, children were encouraged to colour in.
Had to drink a bottle of bourbon.
And colour stuff in. And it was Cary Grant running away from the plane and Eva Marie Saint hanging off the cliff as a colouring in thing. And you could enter with your coloured in picture and you could win tickets to the film, all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
Really, like, crazy weird adding, like, marketing and stuff like that. Because, you know, as much as, like, Jaws invented the blockbuster, this, and other movies like it, this isn't all like Ben-Hur and things like that as well, very much so. You know, these were similar things. They just hadn't really got it down fine-tuned. How do we advertise this? An advert for a Mercedes and a colouring in competition? Yeah, oh, sure. Well, this is.
How do we reach the younger viewer?
This is a film we should be taking small children to, definitely. I mean, it's a 12, I think. They wouldn't get all the overt sexuality.
I'm assuming Mild Peril.
Mild Peril.
We don't get all the overt sexuality. They overdub it.
yeah, indeed. So it was nominated for three Oscars. Best Film Editing, Best Art Direction, Best Original Screenplay. none of which it won, because film editing and art direction went to Ben-Hur, and best original screenplay went to Pillow Talk, a film that I have literally never heard of until this research, no intention of watching.
What? It won an Academy Award, Mike. You must watch
Dances
it.
Dances with Wolves beat Goodfellas, dude. The Oscars don't mean anything.
At least Dancing with Wolves you've heard of.
I've met someone that thinks that Dancing with Wolves should have won over Goodfellas.
Are they still alive?
No, not after that conversation. No. Then he said he didn't like The Last Jedi. No, I'm kidding. The Dancing with Wolves things wasn't helpful. So that brings us to our review.
Oh.
One star. No, clearly not. You go first.
What is it out of? Oh, we're just doing stars.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just do stars.
Let's do it out of Five Faces on Rushmore.
There are only four faces on Rushmore.
Oh, but actually, there was a marketing poster put out that they added Alfred Hitchcock.
Okay, so out of five...
out of five faces.
Apocryphal. Anyway. Five.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nothing wrong with it.
I mean, I don't... No, there's literally not anything I'd change. Or one, or...
I mean, to be honest, could have been worth trimming down by about 15 minutes.
No!
No, there is nothing wrong with this
film. Mr. Mayor, easy. No, literally five stars.
The dialogue, the scripting is a delight.
It's
incredibly well acted / granted.
Sure. You mean Cary granted?
I do. That's what I was going for.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm glad I put a button on it and explained it then.
Thanks. That's good. Yeah. I mean, there will be some people out there who will appreciate
the people that think the Joker is about. We discussed that off mic. Sorry.
The setting, the cinematography, the everything. Yeah. It's all.
I have a weird thing with Hitchcock movies where, I mean, Vertigo is my favourite Hitchcock movie. This is probably my third favourite, but they all get five stars. It's just like Daddy's Favourite, basically. It's all it is. They're all incredible and amazing and perfect in their own way. It's just Daddy's Favourite.
Like, do you like chocolate, vanilla, or strawberry?
Yeah, exactly.
But they're all Neapolitan, baby.
Yeah. Beer gets five stars, wine gets five stars, but, you know, North by Northwest is awesome.
Even orange wine?
That was funky.
Mm.
I'd drink it.
Yeah, well, yes, but...
Anyway,
we were paying
let's not refer to something that literally nobody else knows what we're talking about.
Well, I'm sure that some people who listen to this have heard of orange wine.
It's true. And not wine made of
oranges. You've got your red wine, you've got your white wine, and apparently you've got your
whiskey drink,
you've
got your lager drink, you've got your orange wine, you've got your red wine. You know that song.
Danny wine.
But no, anyway, we're meant to be talking about this. Five stars all the way around.
5, 5, 5.
Should we talk about some people that didn't give it five stars?
Do we have to?
They're quite funny.
Okay, go on. Bring on the morons.
It's Amazon One Star Reviews.
Our first idiot is Amazon customer, a coward, for December 18, 2018, that is, not 1918. I know it's a classic, but it's a really boring patriarchal movie.
Right.
Somebody doesn't understand the word patriarchal. And the review is, I know it's a classic, but it's a really boring patriarchal movie. Just had the one thing to say. They just had the one thing that they wanted to point out. They did give five stars to Heavyweight, which is a 1995 Ben Stiller comedy. And their review is, sometimes funny, Ben Stiller makes a great jerk workout dude. Five stars. So, fuck you.
Yeah, nothing to add. Move on.
I've never even heard of Heavyweight. UN Owen. July 2016.
Sorry, Un-Owen.
Un-Owen, yes. It is both in capitals. Un-Owen. Maybe it's like just one. July 2016. Boring. Just from the title alone, you are incorrect.
How
can you be bored? I've watched most of Hitchcock's other movies, but for some reason I never wanted to watch North by Northwest, even though I heard it was one of the best.
I mean, yeah, why would you?
My subconscious
must
have
known...
Big
fan of your previous work. Apparently your best work is shit.
My subconscious must have known something was off, because when I watched it, it was awful. The plot, Cary Grant's typical acting, everything, in fact. Oh, well, at least now I can check it off my list. Now, when you take that into context with that they give Elementary one star, because it's got Lucy Liu in it.
Right.
Because she's portrayed as being as smart as Sherlock Holmes, and everybody knows that. Are you ready for this? Asian women aren't as smart as men, and it's clearly PC Brigade stuff.
You know what? I think that might be a very good example of a patriarchal show.
This was one of the most insane reviews. I was like, oh, I wonder what else they reviewed. Wow. You put that on the internet and put your name on it. Wow. So apparently they're not just on Twitter. Deborah DeMars, December 2017. Very hard to use. Very hard to use. I could not get the current time to stay. It kept changing to 9:30. Could not get the alarms to set. I mash each button, had multiple uses. I never thought a clock radio would be so difficult.
I think, to be honest...
fundamentally misunderstood their DVD player.
No, I think that Deborah might need to step away from the technology, because not only can you not program a clock radio, you also don't know how Amazon works.
I read it like three times, and I was like, what is she talking? Oh, no, she's not. And lastly, Jordan from July 2015... Take off the rose-coloured glasses. I think you mean tinted, but fine. The plot is imbecilic. I think maybe you just don't understand it because you are an imbecile. Cary Grant gives the only performance he seems capable of giving.
Fair.
Yeah, it might be fair. Worst of all, the suspense was non-existent. It's definitely not true.
They literally suspend people from things in this film.
We all love Hitchcock, but had this movie been made by an unknown, it would not have its current rating. Disagree. I loved the misogyny, though. That's where it earned the only star I'm giving it.
One star for being basically a bit misogynistic.
Five stars for Mozart in the jungle. I love the misogyny. It's literally like, he writes that thing, right? Or she, Jordan, could go either way. Although it seems unlikely it's a she, given... And then it's like a new paragraph. I love the misogyny, though. That's where he got the one star. I love a movie where a man is horrible to a woman. Thanks. Enjoy Joker. Anyway, so that's our one-star reviews.
Right then.
Recommendations.
Well, you...
All of the Hitchcock films?
No.
Okay, Vertigo. No,
not all of the Hitchcock
Psycho,
films.
Psycho, The Man You Knew Too
right,
Much.
Right, it depends.
Rebecca.
Stop. It depends what you enjoy about this movie.
Yes.
If you have enjoyed an adventurous romp, involving amazing Hollywood A-listers, suspenseful, etc., then by all means watch some of the Hitchcock films.
Yes.
Don't watch Psycho. It's a completely different film.
It's true. That is very
totally
true.
Different genre.
And Vertigo.
Totally not match.
Vertigo is very different as well. It, like you say, it is very much depends
on
you.
If
you
like that stuff, then you watch Early Bond, you watch The Eagle Has Landed.
Absolutely, yeah. Dr. No,
kind of
100%,
nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I think if you want like mistaken identity, that is a theme in a lot of Hitchcock movies, like The Man You Knew Too Much and that kind of stuff, Rebecca and stuff like that.
The Man with One Red Shoe? The Man with Two Brains.
Man with Two Brains is a Steve Martin film.
There's definitely a Steve Martin film where he does
the Man
mistake.
With a Golden Arm?
Maybe.
That's not a Hitchcock movie, yeah. But yeah.
Anyway.
Yes, but yeah, so other Hitchcock movies, if you like the way it's made and you like the way it's shot and that kind of stuff, absolutely.
Yes.
I would say the early Bonds, definitely.
Yep.
Those 60 Bonds. There's actually like the Mike Hammer noirs from earlier in the 50s as well. There's quite a lot. He's a PI that's solving cases, but actually it's the same kind of adventurous romp. Kiss Me Deadly, another really good one that would be like this as well, actually. Cary Grant, you can watch Bringing Up Baby, where him and Katharine Hepburn adopt a cheetah. That's a film. It's a real thing. I highly recommend it. It's very funny.
A cat or a...
A cat, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's
a
George Clooney movie that's got Catherine Zeta-Jones in it, and it's a Coen Brothers film, and it's called Something. Love Something. Not Love, actually. It's called Something. That movie is really good because that's basically a Cary Grant screwball comedy, but with George Clooney in it.
Right. No idea what that one is. But
Out
yeah,
of Sight.
Out of Sight. So
with
Soderbergh.
George Clooney. Yes. That's a good one. Sexual chemistry between
a
Cary Grant-esque character
to be honest,
and J-Lo.
If you like cinema, you've probably already watched all of Steve Soderbergh. But yeah. Go and watch it again. Why not?
Any recommendations from you?
Well, I'm giving you a shit
time. I'm clutching at straws at this point. Seven Samurai.
No. I think the one thing I would say is if you have not seen this film, and you may not have on this one, then give it a look. Don't be put off by the film wankeriness, by the Hitchcock. Oh my God, it's like it's great. Yeah. It is legitimately accessible.
It's very much
insanely watchable.
Easy watching, yeah. Very easy
watching. It's also in colour. So, yes. You know, don't worry too much
about
it.
We went back to black and white after this, which is a bit weird.
Yeah.
Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Ooh.
That's got a Saul Bass inspired opening, actually, funnily enough, as well. That's another good one.
What, you mean along with every Bond film?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Every Bond film, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
That's your lot.
That's it.
Ta.
Meanwhile, we need to hop on Southern Airlines. We're heading southwest. East, shit.
So good if Northern Airlines are only fly north. They have to rebrand them to go
back. Airlines.
Northwest. They only go northwest. Well, no, if they want to go any other direction.
One side of the plane has North Airlines. The other side.
Very good.
This has been North by Northwest. We have been Rob and Mike. We've been sat in JB's drinking. What are we drinking?
Buxton Chinook IPA.
Which isn't bad.
It's nice. We talked too much and only had one pint during this. It's a miracle. Better get loaded during your episode.
Tune in 2 weeks' time, or potentially 100 years in 2 weeks' time, when we'll be discussing the Y2K bug. Mm. Until then.
Yes.
Yes.
Until then, yes.
But they didn't have the patience to place it as a priority. Herbs and haters never have served the great majority. Words will never capture the glory of our stories performing, but never forgetting who came before me in the north, west, north, west, north, west, north, west.
Oh, I'm peeking all over the place. It's like a fire. Anyway.
It's like somebody backed over a hydrant.